Welcome to The Grow Show, powered by Steel. On The Grow Show, we share ideas, tips, tactics, and insights to help you grow your landscaping business based on our team's 40 years of experience running a landscaping company and working with other owners and their teams to do the same. New episodes are released weekly on Wednesdays. Here's your host, Marty Grunder.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever the case may be. This is Marty Grunder from Grunder Landscaping Company and The Grow Group. Thanks for downloading The Grow Show, powered by Steel. Today, we're going to talk to my longtime friend and client, Lee Buffington, founder and president of Thrive Outdoors, an Alabama-based landscape contractor, one of the most successful landscaping companies in the South, folks. But first, a reminder, you can get the latest edition of The Grow Show delivered to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts, or you can watch us on YouTube for an enhanced learning experience. The Grow Show is the greatest thing since the state of Alabama. Our guest Lee Buffington lives and his business is based in Alabama. And Lee is a big Alabama fan. And out of respect to him, I'm going to say Roll Tide. If you don't know this, I'm an Auburn fan, so War Eagle. So Lee and I always have some fun with that. But we both will agree that Alabama is a wonderful place to live and visit. If you like golf, it's one of the best states to golf in. Look up the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail. We'll put it in the show notes. If you like nice people, you won't find a state with nicer people than Alabama. It's just beautiful. And if you'd like to see a heck of a landscaping company, let me know, and I'll hook you up with our guest, Lee Buffington. Lee, welcome to The Grow Show.
Very nice intro, Marty. Yeah, thanks for having me on board, and War Eagle to you. I can proudly say that. So I have no problem. I'm not one of those type fans.
Well, I'm not one of those type fans either. In full disclosure, my daughter went to Auburn, as Lee knows. She played soccer there. Lee's daughter, Hannah, is a Division I athlete at Jacksonville State. We have a lot of conversations around the sports and what it's done. Can't believe your daughter is graduating. I mean, good grief, am I old? And in touching on your daughter, Lee, tell us a little bit about your family.
Yeah, so family for me really is the foundation for the reason that we all do what we do. It's Crystal and I have been married this year 25 years. We have
congrats
three kids that really I think that's the proudest that we have and an accomplishment to see what the kids are turning into to being, and they're respected in the community, and they're kind and very disciplined children. All three different, but they're something we're proud of. But yeah, we have really grown up in the business together. We dated through high school, so we got to spend that time together. And then the business really evolved. You know, we were dating prior to it ever coming to play. And so she went through college. She's a nurse by trade. So she practiced for several years in that and has been out of that and in the house for, you know, quite a few years now with the kids growing up. But yeah, great partner. And we see a lot of things eye to eye, and she's the opposite side of me. So
you outkicked your coverage. She is a wonderful lady. We had a ton. My wife Lisa and her we had a ton of fun last year in Italy for our ACE peer group trip. And your boys are playing football now on Fridays. You got to just be having a blast.
Yeah, it's really a good time in life. Hannah, like you mentioned, she's in her senior season at JSU playing softball. She's a business admin student, so she's going to have a master's next year in that.
That's just incredible.
She's, you know, really doesn't know exactly what she wants to do, but she's has a lot of leadership attributes.
Right.
And she's going to do well wherever she is. Our oldest son, JP, both boys really are in sports and outdoors and that sort of thing. So they're very competitive from that side. And he's gotten the entrepreneur bug. He started up a pressure washing business. So in soft washing.
I'm not surprised.
He's really got that thing dialed up, and that's going to be his career path at this point. That's what he's decided he's going to lean into and really turn up the pressure coming into next year. So he's doing well with that. Our youngest son is sports and outdoors and girlfriend and those kind of things, but
right.
Not sure what he's going to do long range, but you know, he may be college there. It's crazy. All three kids are smart. They all make great grades. But Hannah's in school now. JP says he's not going to college, and we're not sure about Patrick. We'll see what happens with him. But I always say with those three that you know, Hannah's going to be leading the company, and JP's going to be leading operations, and Patrick's going to be on the golf course selling. So we'll see how they turn out.
I mean, that wouldn't be anything wrong with that.
Yeah. No, not at all. Not at all. Yeah.
So it's fun so much fun. I'm experiencing it now. You know, my kids are, they're all out of college now, and I have one grandchild, another one on the way. You probably see yourself in each of them in different ways. That's so interesting that your son is a power washing business. Tell us how you ended up in the landscaping business.
Well, for me, it started out as a summer hobby. It was a buddy of mine started up senior year in high school, and we were just going to do it through the summer. And we both had attributions of going to college. I had a scholarship, wanted to be a surgeon. So that was really my lifelong dream, was to go through medical school and do that. And so then our senior year, we get into this thing. And at the end of the year, we decide that, you know, do we want to go ahead and grow the next year? And I went to him and said, you know, I'd love to invest. Didn't have any money, but let's go buy another mower each and come to the table with, you know, with another machine, and we can hire another person next year and do more work. And he didn't really want to do that. So we parted ways at that point on that side of the business, still remained friends. And, but that was the direction. So then still didn't have intentions of staying in the business full time. It was just more of a, I knew I could get a return on the investment. So I was planning to, you know, do that another year or two, maybe through college. And so at the end of the second year, decided to stay with it. It was, we were doing really well, did 200,000 revenue. And so it was a pretty fun time for a 19-year-old.
Yes. 200,000 is a 19-year-old.
Yeah. So it was a fun time. And it opened my eyes to what could be possible. I really at that time didn't understand anything about business or scale. I just knew how to work hard. I knew how to put my head down and grind. And so that was really what I was focused on at that point, was doing the right thing and working hard. And but I did see that even though I didn't understand what scale was, I understood that the more people I could hire and bring on the team, the more we could do, which ultimately could maybe back me down where I'm not dependent on daily to be involved, you know, in my income earning ability. So that was where it really what got me in and what kept me in. I mean, ultimately, that's what I went to.
What were the challenges you faced early on? How'd you overcome them?
So, you know, really the first part, I think the biggest thing when you're 18, 19, 20 years old and you're trying to hire people, everybody you hire, generally speaking, is older than you are. So that's one of the earliest, most challenging pieces that I had. I'm hiring, you know, 28, 30, 35-year-old people, sometimes even 40, 45-year-old that have a lot more experience than I do in the world and in the industry even, and trying to get them to buy into the vision and take a 19-year-old leader. That's probably one of the toughest things. And that really probably changed at about 27, 28 years old. At that point, I had enough experience under my belt and knew enough about the business and the industry to really not be a problem to lead those older individuals. So that was one of the biggest challenges. Another one that I was always concerned about was just making it through the winter, because everybody says, you know, if they don't know the landscape, what do you do in the wintertime? You know, how do you survive? And, you know, knowing what we know now, it's not really that big of a deal. The winter's pretty short, and there's a lot of preparation for the season, you know, coming up. But at that time, I was really concerned about getting through the winter. So it was always, you know, what do we do? In fact, funny story, my first year in business, we took on a mulching job for a guy, and we performed the job. And I don't recall how much it was, but I asked the guy, I said, would you mind paying me monthly, you know, over for the job over the next year or so. So I'd have a little bit of money coming in through the winter. So it's really, I financed the job for free. Jeez. Of course, the customer loved it. Really a stupid financial decision on my part.
But yeah.
That's part of learning, part of growing.
Exactly. How many years have you been in business then? 27, 28?
This will be 29 years.
29. Okay. So let's fast forward 29 years from age 19 or 18. Tell us a little bit about Thrive Outdoors, because when I met you, it was Turf Tamers. Tell us a little bit about where you are now and what you're doing. You have three locations, and let's talk a little bit about the business today, because it's amazing what you've done.
Yeah. So we rebranded 4 years ago, I guess now, and went from Turf Tamer, which we were known for that for, you know, many years. And we went to Thrive Outdoor. The main reason for the rebrand was really about our people. It was creating a thriving environment for our people to come into and set a career path for them moving forward. And so that was really, that's who we are. That's who we've been, but we really didn't put that in an outward focus to our people. So we just really began a journey that was more inward looking at our individual internal clients, rather than externally. It doesn't mean we took the eye off the ball with the external clients, but we focused more of let's create an environment, create a path of prosperity for our people so that they can then grow and move through the business with their career paths at whatever level or pace they want to take. Now, what that did do is it requires us to grow fast because we can't go to our people and say, you're going to have to wait. You know, they want to grow. Okay, right. Well, give me 3 or 5 years and I'll give you something. No, they've got to have options. And so
right.
Fast growth allows for that track to be available for them.
And we've learned that too. That is so true.
Big deal. So that's one of the big things that came from that. And then really just putting the focus internally. And we took out, honestly, we took out almost all of our external marketing to our customer because what we felt like and what we really learned, I'd say in the 30 years, is that if I can focus on the internal people and make it where they're in an environment where they can prosper and we can attract and become magnetic to get more and more people. I've always said in everything we do in business, get the paper, get the contract, get the work, and the people will come to that. Okay. That's different in this arena. When we're here, it's get the people in the deal and then the work comes. And we've always operated the opposite of that is let's go win the work and then hire the people.
Yeah. Right.
If you ask people in really any industry, but especially in our industry, you ask them, what's your number one problem? It's lack of people.
Right.
And so if we can find a way to have all the people that we need, which is, you know, a pop dream, but if we can, you're going to have all the work you ever need because that's a single inhibitor for gaining more work is we don't have enough workforce to do it, or we dilute the workforce to such a level that we degrade the service. So then it's a revolving door and we're kicking customers out the back door. So that was, you know, really a big part of that. And primarily it's looking at people differently. It's looking at people more of as an investment to get a return over time rather than an immediate return, which is the way we always looked at it in the past. It was, I'm going to hire this person. I want to get a return very, very rapidly. And a mentor of mine, Mike Rory, you know, I know, great friend of yours as well. You know, Mike hit that on me several years ago. And he said, you buy a truck and expect a return on it in 1 year. You don't. He said, don't do that with people either. Invest in the person and get the return over time and always think bigger about those things.
Yeah. And you know, Lee, you've been in our legacy peer group, I don't even know how many years, forever. And you and I have spent hours talking. And it's so true. You know, there's some weird things going on in the economy, but the companies that are fully staffed, they're finding the work now. That is, you know, it's a little odd. The sales are a little tougher to get now than they were say 2-3 years ago, but the companies that are fully staffed are getting the work. Very, very, very true. Can you share a moment or a job that stands out or a major win that maybe you felt was like, man, I'm this thing here with that is now morphed into Thrive Outdoors. This thing is good stuff. And I want you to touch a little bit. It's Fort Payne, Alabama, Huntsville, Alabama, and Chattanooga, Tennessee, if I'm correct.
And Birmingham and Decatur.
Decatur. Okay, yeah. I didn't know about Decatur. I knew that I did know about Birmingham. I did not know about Decatur.
Decatur houses under our Huntsville location, so it's really managed by that team, but it's an extension of it. But yes, it's those five locations. Birmingham, we just moved into brick and mortar at the beginning of this year. So it's fairly new, but doing well and a lot of upside there. And
yes,
the markets are all been established for a few years. So a lot of opportunity. But I would say, you know, from my perspective, when I look at wins, and there's many, many great things to talk about over the years. But the biggest thing that I think from a win perspective really has nothing to do externally with a customer or a job that we won. It's when your company begins to be viewed in the eyes of your people as a career path and not just a job.
I see.
I don't want to say that it's a corporate environment, but I want to say that it becomes more, it's not just me. You know, back in the early days, it's me and everybody there feels like they're working for the owner. They're working for, you know, whatever the owner's destination is down the road. But I think when you see that point and you really start attracting and getting people on the team that are even better than you are. And I think that's the number one thing to do is to, you've got to be strong enough in yourself to step back and say, let me bring on people that are smarter than I am. Let me bring on people that are better at doing these things where I'm short-sighted.
Right.
Or even in the things that I'm good at it. Hey, if I can bring somebody on that's better than I am, two always make it better than one. So it's that was really a cool thing to see that. and to see an ownership mentality and their future being held in their hands, meaning they own the direction. So I'm going to keep it between the ditches, but at the end of the day, the accelerator is theirs. You know, if they want to push harder, I've told all of my people, and I tell them every single year as we go along, the speed in which we go is up to you. I'll pump all the fuel you want on it. As long as you build a plan and want to go, that is your direction. Your the momentum's in your hands. And so I think when we got to that point where those things started happening, that's when a really cool thing happens. And that's what I love about this whole industry as a general whole. This industry, and I'm sure there's others, I just don't know them as well as I know this one, but a lack of education, a lack of wealth does not limit a person in this industry.
No, you're right. I've never thought about it that way, but you're right.
You can have zero education, and if you have an aptitude to want to grow, you've got the mindset of a winning attitude, you've got the mindset to want to be better tomorrow than you are today, the possibilities are endless. You can grow to run companies from being on a weed eater. That's the beautiful thing about the industry. And I think that's why it's so successful, why there's so much growth and so many things going on in it right now that are great.
You know, and as I'm listening to you, it's so true. And what I'm hearing you say, my interpretation of there wasn't any one big thing. It was when everyone saw it as a career opportunity. But I'm also going to guess, and you're a very humble guy, I'm going to guess it's also you loosen the grip on the club, to use a golf analogy. As our buddy Jeffrey John said, you know, was a bottleneck when he holds a water bottle. You started realizing that you had to cool it and you had to let other people be in the spotlight, own things, run a branch, give them some autonomy, get out of their way. Is that a fair assessment?
That's absolutely, because that's the bottleneck. That's where we slow down. You know, I was just looking at a couple of days ago, and I was thinking this was more of an internal thought, just thinking about how we've evolved. And 5 years ago, there was not a proposal that left our facility that I didn't look at and review.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. I mean, that's where we were. And that was the bottleneck. We couldn't push stuff out the door. Now, I mean, I've probably reviewed 2 or 3% of what goes out. So it's a very small amount that I ever see. And I think that speaks volumes to our team and the trust that I've placed in them. And it's not that, you know, it's not that I'm just sending that information out and letting them run and not getting any kind of check back, but you know, our margins are where they need to be. When do we bid jobs and flub them up occasionally? Sure, that's going to happen. That's part of the deal. But it's better than putting a restriction on it. So we're going to be perfect on everything we send out. How about let's just put the bids out there, and we are going to lose some of them, but we're going to win many of those. But keep those things flowing, because a customer wants to see it pretty rapidly. And you know, if you put in late and or just never even deliver. So that's been a big part of that.
You have impressed me since the first time I met you. I remember sitting at one of the first grows that you came to, having a conversation after hours. You've been to Grunder Landscaping and sent people here to our field trips. I don't even know how many times. You're a great student. You pick up stuff here and there. You were one of the first users of Aspire. I know that's playing an integral role in your business. And for the folks listening to The Grow Show today, powered by Steel, whether you run Aspire or LMN, why don't you speak to the power of having a data aggregator like that? Because that has to be one of the reasons why you don't need to look at proposals, that there's a more accurate bidding system, right?
That's no question about it. And Aspire was really something that we longed for. When we went on to Aspire, we had 8 different programs that we were using for gathering data, estimating.
That's called a Frankenstein.
And it was treacherous. I mean, it was, and they all worked well. They just didn't sync. They didn't bring in data in real time to be able to manage it from that perspective. So that's the thing that Aspire and LMN and all those do. Now, I personally feel like Aspire is the best on the market. I think they really are the best out there. I think they've got the right mindset. They blend together well, software building and boots on the ground, getting the work done. And I think that's where a lot of software companies miss. They're great at building software, but they're not good at the other side. So I think Aspire really syncs that up very nicely. And they had that out of the foundation, right out of the gate. But that's been a huge part, that we can create consistency, you know, across the board and efficiency within turning the bids out. We've actually, set up a pretty cool team now. The way we operate these things is you know, we're bringing in people. So we've got a support center that houses all of our estimating, and then all of our people from all the markets are sending everything back to that hub and spoke model. So it's, everything's coming back. We get really efficient with turning those things out. The people in the field that are delivering, finding the leads and delivering the proposals, they're not doing the proposals. They're not building the estimates. They're not doing.
See, I didn't even realize you were doing that now. Yeah. I mean, that is, that's
rolling, man. We're like blazing fast. Yeah. With really good, efficient people that's all they do. I call it sitting in a dark room working on a computer. And you know, they never see the light of day type thing, but they're busting these things out, and we're consistent from market to market. So if we deliver one in Chattanooga or Birmingham, it looks the same, feels the same, it's put together the same. So we got a consistent approach across the board. So when we go against our competition, we generally know if they're pretty consistent, we know where they're going to be. We go against some competition and they're all over the board and we can't really tell. So it's a, you know, kind of a crapshoot, but we try to be dialed in and be consistent on those things. And that's been a game changer for us in just the way we manage that. And it's a little bit different philosophy on all of our business. We really do it all that way, where we try to manage things in a, let's get to be experts in your lane, and let's stay in your lane, and let's hire more people to manage each lane.
Yeah. So how do you manage, I'm listening to all this, 5 different markets, you know, all about within 2 hours of each other, I would say, if I'm not geographically challenged. How do you manage to stay competitive and continue to grow, not just in those markets, but also in an industry that's changing?
Yeah. So I think, you know, and I've mentioned this about people, you know, the whole time, we're always looking for great people to add to the team. So what, you know, we look for great people, honestly, even over competent people. I mean, we feel like we can teach competence. We can teach, you know, industry knowledge. We just look for someone with a pure heart that's got a desire to learn and grow and be better and look out for their fellow patron. And when we get those opportunities, we try to, even if we don't have a place, we try to find them a place, whether it be immediate or be over time. We may court them for a period of time, but we're trying to look to get those people on our team. And usually what we found is there's very few times we've ever brought them on our team that we haven't been able to grow into them very quickly.
Well, and that, just to interrupt you real quick, that goes back to the lesson you talked about with Mike Rory. Like, somebody walks into your life, they're wildly talented. You know, that's the chicken and the egg thing. And what you realize when you start growing, that you got to have the equipment in place to go get the growth. Now, yes, you can go sell a bunch of contracts and staff up, but if you're looking to open up a branch, you probably got to, I mean, we just closed on our first branch today, Lee, in Cincinnati.
Congratulations.
Super excited. And I've learned a lot from our peer groups, from people like Mike Rory, tons of other folks. We got the branch manager in place. We know what crews are going down there. That's an ideal situation. I'm sure you can't always do that. But doesn't that go back to Mike's lesson that he shared with you about, you know, I think so many times we try to miser it and we say, well, you know, I'm not going to go after that contract because I want to save up some more money. I'll buy the equipment, then I'll go after the contract. Well, that's not how you grow. That doesn't work.
Doesn't work. Yeah, it doesn't.
No. You think it works when you're newer in business, but, and I forget how old you are, Lee. I know I'm at least 8 or 9 years older than you. When you get to our age with what we're doing with our businesses, you know that does not work that way.
Yeah. It's painful any direction you go. So move fast. You know, get through the thing, keep your finger on the pulse, but that's exactly right. And when you get to, you know, when you have someone that walks through your door that's an A player, you got to find whatever you can do to get them on the team. They've got to be on the bus with you
and then grow into it
and get out of their way.
Yeah.
You
know, right.
You hire great people, give them the tools that they need to work, give them the support that they need and get out of their way and let them run. And, you know, that's what I think is really the biggest thing on staying competitive is keeping those key people and keep control of the chaos within the market. We often say that, you know, if every day is an emergency, you've got a people or a process problem.
If every day is an emergency, you got a people or a process problem. I love that. That's
something
great
going on that you've got to change one of those things. Either the process is wrong or the people are wrong. Or maybe it's a combination.
Yeah, that's a great lesson.
But you can't come in and have an emergency every day. What we want, my goal and what we tell our people, the end game is we want to control the chaos and we want calmness. We want calmness in the midst of a storm. We want to be calm. And I relate a lot to flying. You know, I'm a pilot.
Right.
I enjoy flying and I love the there's a lot of things that our government does that I don't agree with. But the flying industry, the FAA, they have that part of it dialed down with ATC. There's not a thing that happens that they don't have a plan for. And that plan is immediate enacted. It's if there's an emergency and your own frequency, I fly a lot, so I hear a lot. I hear some emergencies that pop up. Pilot comes on and says, I've got this going on. Immediately, there's a calm voice that comes on, not the controller they've been dealing with. Maybe they're the first response. There's another one that comes on and says, hey, go to this frequency. I'll take care of you. And they immediately are picking up because they're listening in the background. And as soon as that happens, they're taking over. And that's the thing that what we've got to have.
Yes, that's the parallel in business.
Yes, where you're laying out there, we're running. Okay, we hit a roadblock. We hit something that hits us in the face. You got to deal with it right then. Everything else has got to keep going. We got to be able to handle this obstacle, but we still got to fly the plane. We got to get this thing on the ground because landing is not optional. So that's where when you take that type approach where you can control the chaos and keep some calmness in the business, every day is not going to be that way, but most days need to be that way, even in the midst of the battle.
Everyone should hit pause. They should rewind the Grow Show here about 2 minutes and listen to that again, because that's gold right there. And that is how you get on the other side of it. You know, Dr. John Maxwell, who we were fortunate enough to have come to one of our peer group meetings several years ago, which was an amazing experience. He likes to say, Lee, things are never as bad as we think they are, nor are they as good. They're somewhere in between. And that's kind of what you're talking about there. And as a pilot, you got to stay calm. You've got to stay calm.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. And you know, part of that being competitive and continue to grow, I think we always, you know, in the South, we have crazy slogans, but we say, you know, pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered.
Yes, so I say that. You've heard me say that. 100%. Right.
With consistent service and a genuine heart, when you lead into it, lead with a good heart and good things line up. You know, if you go in and you're trying to manipulate, you're trying to take advantage of people, you're trying to, you know, displace others to make yourself be better. You know, it may be a short-term win, but it's not going to be long-term success.
Well, and that leads me into another question I wanted to ask you. I know relationships have been at the root of your business growing, and I don't think there's a landscaper growing a business that wouldn't say relationships are important. Why don't you speak to the role that relationships have played to you in your business success?
Relationships are really at the foundation, and I look at relationships really as making deposits. So I look at life really as this way. It's you're making deposits along the way, whether it be friends, whether it be business acquaintances, customers, and those deposits are not necessarily that I'm doing more than expected, but I'm doing what's expected. Yeah. I'm delivering on what's expected of me in this particular environment, and that's making deposits along the way, because at some point you're going to have to pull from that. At some point, you're going to let that individual, whether it be a spouse, a kid, a partner that's in business, a customer, you're going to let them down at some point. There's going to be a failure where you didn't honor a deal, you didn't go through it the way you needed to. And at that point, you got to pull back from that. You got to be able to have some deposits made. Whereas, you know, we often tell our people here when we're talking about tough decisions with internally, if we've got a person that's been with us for 10 years and they go through a hardship, we're going to do everything in our possible power to lead them through that, to support them through that. If we have someone that walks through the door and they've been here for 2 days and they have something that pops up, we can't lead them in the same manner in which we led
no.
them. We just can't.
So true.
That.
No,
they
right.
have not made those deposits in the relationship that are important for us to be able to pull from. So that's really the biggest thing from a relationship perspective that I look at is just make deposits, pull back, always lead with love in your heart. And the content's not as important. If you're leading with love and I got to deliver a tough message to you, the message is not that critical. The content is not that critical. If I'm leading with the right heart, that I'm giving you everything I have, I'm giving you every opportunity to succeed.
Right.
And that's both internally and externally.
See, look at you, an Alabama fan with a soft, loving heart. I love it.
Loving heart, yeah. And we're not beating you by 70, but
Well, Auburn football's terrible. I'm only interested in the Auburn-Alabama women's soccer game. So.
Yeah.
Looking back, this is a deep one. Looking back, is there anything you'd do differently in your business career, Lee?
I mean, there's a list a mile long, but I think the number one that I would say is hire – high performing key positions much faster than I ever did before.
Yeah, right. So you thought you couldn't afford them?
That's it. Well, what I think you do as an entrepreneur is you hire what you think you can afford, not what you need to go where you want to go.
That is such so well said. So well said. You know, we have a person that we both admire, Clay Mattil, took the Iams Corporation from $10 million in sales to $1 billion, sold it to Procter & Gamble. He was a tremendous mentor and friend to me. He passed away in August of 2003. I think about him often. And he used to tell me when I first started spending time with him in the late 90s, Lee, he would tell me, you got to spend to get good help. And I was telling Clay's son, Mike, the other day, who's a very good friend of mine, I was telling him that, you know, your dad used to say that to me, and I used to nod my head in agreement, but then I would go home and tell my wife that, I mean, I know what he's saying, but I can't do that. Like, I don't have any mind to do that. That ain't going to work. And now I look back at age 56, that statement that he said that I thought was not one that I could relate to and made sense, and it does make sense. And you know, you may at a point in your company have people making more than you, but that's part of the vision. That's where you're going, and that's what it takes. Does that relate to you as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. No question about it. And that's where you've got to step aside and say, what do you want to have? Do you want to have something that you're leading and in control and in command of completely with a totalitarian discipline, or do you want to have it where you've got a democracy that we can lead as a group, we can attract other people? Because, you know, if it's a siloed approach where you've got a solo effort by one individual, high performers don't want to be there. Yeah. They're not going to be there.
Right. No.
And you're going to become repellent to them rather than magnetic.
Right. And that's not just Lee's not saying that because he read that in a book. Lee's saying that because you've experienced that. Both you and I were dictators at a point in our career. That's emphasis right. on the dick, to be honest.
That's
with
right.
You.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you learn that, hey, nobody wants to be around me. I'm not making money. Like, I got to make a change here. This got to go differently.
Yeah.
You've been in our ACE group for years. What has ACES meant to you?
Well, so it's such a tremendous brotherhood, and we've got sisters in there too. So that's not meaning anything from a sexist perspective, but the non-combative environment that you can go into, and you can learn from so many people and so many different experiences that they have. And you often say, you've said this for years, we don't want advice, we want experience. You know, we don't tell us what we should do that you've never done. Tell us what you've done that leads us down a path that's going to lead us to a better. And I think that's where the ACE group, the peer group, comes in, and it offers that experience share that you can gain from people that obviously when I'm in that, I'm looking for people that are, you know, that are where I want to be. So I can learn from both ends. I can learn from people that are below in revenue where we are. And sometimes you lose touch of those things. And so it's great to get that back. But then you also look at people that are running companies that are much larger and that are more refined and that have systems in place. And I think it's like, you know, about anything you do, reading a book or whatever you got, there's about 20% of the material that you're going to pull out and extract that you can use. You got to peel through the 80% that's there.
Yeah, that's
not as important to you. So you've got to pick and choose. And when we go into the peer group, and we've been through several revisions of that over the years, and we've had several different groups put together with different companies. And I think it's great. Every time we get a change, I think it's good. But you find the element within each company that they do really well.
Yeah.
I'm going after that. I'm cherry picking it. I want to get
right.
What you do best. I'm getting it. And I'm not going to get the stuff that you're not that good at because this guy's better.
Right.
So I'll go steal that from him and
then,
you know, come back and try to work to implement those things. But to me is it's one of the best, if not the best investment we've ever made in terms of being in business growth, showing us what's possible out there. Because I think when you sit in your office and you sit honed into your business, you don't realize what's out there.
No. And why would you? Why would you?
Yeah.
I mean, you have to, I'm sure you know this, how much I've learned from our peer groups. I mean, my goodness, it's insane. I was adding it up several months ago. I've been to over 220 landscaping companies in the last 30 years. and the things I've learned, the people I've met, the things I've seen that were working that we weren't doing, even just the motivation to see someone that was 20 years younger than me and their company's bigger than mine. And I come back home and I'm like, what am I doing? I'm overthinking this. That young person just goes for it, like what you were talking about, and I need to go for it. And that's what we've done. It's fun. All right, just one more question. We'll wrap it up. What's your number one piece of advice you would give to any landscaper listening to The Grow Show?
So my number one is mentors. It's
okay.
That's going to change. It's not going to be necessarily just one. It's several. I mean, I keep several in my wheelhouse all the time. And it's go ask for knowledge. Go ask them for help. I've never had one that's turned me down any time ever. So I've asked a lot of people for advice, and I do it frequently. I do it every day. And that's the one thing I would say that's a huge piece is find a mentor, ask for that information, and don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of what they may say. Worst thing you can do is tell you no.
Yeah, right. Oh, well, Mike Rory has looked at me over a bowl of soup and said, "You're an idiot. What are you doing?"
Yeah,
and it didn't bother me. I understand. He said it from a perspective of love and help, and I know he means a lot to you.
That's the beauty of Mike. That's what I love about Mike so much. When you leave Mike, you walk in with a complicated, complex problem, and 3 minutes later, it's like, well, shit. That didn't look like that was very complex.
I'm almost ashamed I brought that up.
Call, like, you idiot, why are you even bringing this to me?
Oh, so much fun.
A profound way to get that stuff across. And the way he looks at business, it's just, he's really a wealth of knowledge. And
it's so true. So true. Wonderful man. So, well, Lee, you are the only guy I know that has landed a plane twice without the landing gear. That video of you landing that plane with no landing gear on the live shot on the news was just unbelievable. You are a wonderful father. You are a wonderful husband, but you've been a great friend and supporter to me. And I'm grateful to know you. And I'm really glad to share my favorite person in Alabama with the rest of the Grow Show listeners. So thanks for coming on today.
Glad to be here, Marty. Always a pleasure. And love you, brother.
Love you too. And we're going to see you at Grow in Columbus.
Yes.
All right. Yes, sir. That's going to do it for this week's edition of The Grow Show, powered by Steel, folks. If you haven't done so already, subscribe to The Grow Show. And if you can, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more success-minded landscape professionals find us. And if you really want to help your buddy Marty, take this episode of Lee Buffington and share it with a friend. Text it to him right now or to a landscape pro you know. That'll really help us, and you'll help them too. Thanks for joining us again this week on The Grow Show. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Grow Show. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and head to growgroupinc.com for more information and resources to grow your landscaping business. A special thanks to the folks at Steel, whose support makes this podcast possible and whose reliable handheld power equipment makes our jobs easier daily. We'll talk to you next week.